Aloha, my name is Michael Takemoto. I'm 66 years old, and today's date is October 23rd, 2023. And right now we're in my studio in Kahului, and I'm with my stepson, Andrew.
Hi, I'm Andrew. My name is Andrew Chin. I am 35 years old as of actually this month. where I'm re real excited to be here.
Thank you. Well, Andrew, really, I didn't know you until you were maybe 10 years old, was it? When I met mom and hooked up with mom
Right, like
around then.
it must have been somewhere around there. Yeah, somewhere like between like 9 and 10. It has to
Okay.
be. Yeah,
Yeah.
we were really little.
And you and Neil, your brother Neil, as well. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to talk maybe a little bit about your early childhood memories before I came along or after?
Oh, well. Okay, let's see. Okay. So, me and Neil growing up, it was actually, mom was really is an amazing woman. We both know this already. I remember, wow. I remember like little bits of like playing in our yard mostly, growing up, hanging out with the neighborhood kids. But like family life was really interesting because our well as you know our fa our father was kind of a druggie, and so he had his moments. He also just had a lot of anger issues and stuff like that, which luckily he never took them out on us. But it was a lot of hearing about those fights and so on and so forth. But yeah. I mean, it wasn't all bad. It wasn't all bad there. We used to do a lot of camping and stuff like that. We did a lot of outdoor activities growing up. I remember we'd go to the beach regularly and stuff like that. It was. I remember the divorce. I remember being asked about before, in court and stuff like that. Before even going through the whole process, I remember a guy holding up a doll and having to talk about the different he wanted to make sure that our father never touched us or anything like that in wrong places. So I remember having to point at the doll and stuff like that and having no idea why they're persecuting him to this level. But it was like standard procedure or whatever. But it was really invasive. When we got When he left, I remembered it was a little, it was, I mean, you know, it wasn't that long of a period, but it was a small period where mom really was struggling, I remembered, and we would like, it was a lot of really quick meals. But yeah, a lot of canned food, I remembered. A lot of canned food, a lot of pork and beans. it was like whatever mom could afford too, right? I don't know, what was your, not to turn it on you like this, but what was your childhood like?
Well, my childhood, actually looking back 66 years from the past 66 years, my dad is a Maui boy from Honolulu, Hawaii, but just going back a few a generation or two, somehow he got to go to UC Berkeley in California, where he majored in dairy science. So he was working for the dairy industry, and then World War II broke out, and he was on the mainland, and being Japanese, American Japanese, that is, he was interned, sent to an internment camp. And I think he might have just gotten his degree or something, but he was got in, to be in charge of the internment camp's dairy farm. And from there, my mom, who's what we'd call a Kotonk, or a Japanese American born on the mainland, a Kotonk, because they would knock their head on the ground and make a Kotonk sound.
Hey.
So they met and fell in love, After the war, they moved to Hawaii, and they first moved to Oahu, where my sisters and I was born.
Oh, wait, wait, before you continue, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
What do you, can you further elaborate the, cause like I've heard that term before, katonk, but like, so what was that exactly? Like their heads hit the ground and like, what does that come from? Like heads hit the ground is like, okay. Sorry.
Something about the Hawaii boys when they were, in the military, the 442nd, mm-hmm. like that, and the Japanese, American Japanese troops were, put together in the same unit.
Yeah.
And so the local Hawaii boys would kind of harass the mainland boys that when they knocked their head or something, or they pushed them down, I'm not sure exactly, but when they fell down and hit their head, they made a katonk sound.
Yee.
So hence the
yee.
hence the name katonk for mainland-born American Japanese.
Ah, it's so violent. Like, it's really funny just because, like, you think about, like, how, like, like when I was going to elementary school, I remembered Frank DeLima coming and talking about, "Oh yeah, we just made jokes of each other because it's funny." And it's like, no. There's definitely some, and like you know, like and then like growing up, we'd always talk about it being like, "Oh, there's no hate involved in it," but that's clearly wow. Okay, sorry. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. It was just that just blew my mind. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off topic so quickly, so easily. Sorry, it's my ADD brain. I'm sorry. Continue on that though. Like you're where did Grandma have and Auntie Pat and Auntie Kathy? Or were they on the mainland or they
in Hawaii? No. So after my parents were married. On the mainland,
yeah,
probably at the. I think they were married actually at the internment camp they were at,
mm-hmm.
some Gila reservation in Arizona. And after that, my dad, of course, wanted to come back to Hawaii, and he got a job with Dairyman's, which later became a Metal Gold Dairies, and so he was working for them on Oahu in Honolulu, where my two older sisters, Pat and Kathy, and myself were born.
Mm.
And so from Oahu, somehow Metal Gold Dairies got a contract with the U.S. military, and then to produce milk products, dairy products for the American military bases in Japan at the time. So from Honolulu, no, actually, wait, I'm missing a space. From Honolulu, we moved to Chicago for a few years because that's where the main headquarters of Beatrice Foods, which at the time was the mother company of Metal Gold.
Uh-huh.
So we lived in Chicago for a few years. I was like...
Wait, you were in the state of Illinois?
I was in the state of Illinois.
Before going to college, too, then?
Yeah, before going to college.
Oh, okay.
And... So we were there for like 4 years. I was very young at the time. I think I went to nursery school in kindergarten and first grade. And then my father had opportunity to go to Japan, where we lived there for roughly 9 years in the Yokohama area.
Mm-hmm.
And then once he retired, he decided he wanted to come back home to Maui because we had a property in Honokawai at that time. But also growing up, whenever we would have vacation times, we would come to Maui and stay at Honokawai.
Oh.
And so we finally settled here, I believe it was in 1973, when my parents and I came here. My sisters are older than me, so they had moved to the mainland by then.
Wow, so much traveling in such a short amount of time.
That's
a trip. I mean, like, in Japan, like Chicago, Japan,
yeah,
all of that. Like, that's crazy. I was always really curious about that because I remembered it had military reasons, but I was like, wait, I always wondered about that because it's like, wait, but Grandpa wasn't military. himself wasn't military. So like I was always curious about that.
Yeah, a civilian employee,
mm-hmm.
Of a government contractor with the military. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
That's really cool.
Okay, but going back to you.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
So, I never, you know, I never met your biological father. So, you know, I just hear stories about him. So I never, you know, if he walked right by me today, I would never recognize him or anything. But at some point, I was an artist while practicing visual arts by then. And so I was involved in creating art and also interested in art education, and had this opportunity to do this Artists in the Schools program. And that's where I met Mom.
Mm-hmm.
At Cool Elementary School.
Yeah.
And then that's where I met you and Neil. Soon then.
Okay, really soon after.
Yeah.
That sounds like Mom. Like immediately. Okay. As soon as possible. Test them with the kids, like immediately.
Yeah.
Mom was very protective of us, so. Okay.
So, I don't know, were you apprehensive when I came into your guy's life, or, you know, who the heck is this guy, and what's he up to?
Honestly, it wasn't, not, for me anyway, not really. It was actually a welcoming idea, because, honestly, losing my father, because Mom sheltered. See, a lot of the bad things about our father, Mom sheltered us. She really sheltered us. And so because of that, like she really protected us from him. So like a lot of his negative sides, I've never really seen it myself all too much. I knew it was there. I could see the stress in my mother. I heard them having their fights at some point it got to like being almost every night where like they're shouting and I'd hear like furniture being thrown and shit like that. But like, it was never like, it was not like, but like, honest and truthfully, me and Neil, we stayed in our room, and then sometimes I remembered wondering a little bit, like, was this my fault? Is it something I did? Because oftentimes it would be somewhere along the lines of something sparked during dinner, and that's where their argument started, or something like that, and I thought it was because it was the last thing I did, or something, you know? But like, for the most part, though, I really only got to see mostly like positive things from him. So like, for example, he was very active in the sense that he really loved making things. I remember when he was making a mongoose trap, and he was like, "Here, I'll show you how," even though he wasn't really showing me how, he was just building one and I was there, you know, but like it certainly felt like it. I remembered learning lessons from him here and there, because I'd ask. I remember one time I was asking him to teach me, like, because I was like, really, I can't remember what it was. It was either Power Rangers or some kind of other martial arts thing that I was into at the time. I was asking him, teach me, Daddy, do you know karate or whatever? You know, because like, you know, back then didn't know any better. And then I remembered one time have him just showing me how to properly throw a punch, and then had me going across the room. And looking back at it now, a lot of these moments it was him trying to keep me busy, because I was a really talkative child. Like even now, as like you know how it is. Like I'm just a really talkative person. It's part of my nature. I'm really ADHD too, right? I remembered the things that I really remember, though, are not so much other than that, like, not a whole lot of memories. Like, I remembered the dogs. The main memories that I remembered are more like sensation, like, because we were just so little then. And that's, at least that's how I interpret it anyway. But when, like, I remember the smell of tobacco. I remember the smell of, well, specifically burnt tobacco. I remember the smell of cigarettes on him all the time. And he was kind of a sweaty dude. I remembered when seeing his gross teeth. Because I remembered he had a few teeth missing. I remembered, like, seeing, and then I also remembered, one of the things I didn't know what it was then, but when I became older, I figured out, oh, that's Pakalolo. But, I remembered, he had a couple small pipes. Like one of them was a wooden pipe, I remembered, at least, right? And I always thought it was for his tobacco smoking, because that's what mom would say. But I remembered the smell of his. He had his upper drawer, the upper drawer in their room. You opened it up, and it just reeked of ganja. And it was like, wow, like, and I never would have recognized it back then. And I also remember the sound of his voice, which, you know, back then as a child, it was a really comforting sound. But honest and truthfully, I'm pretty sure most people would find his voice itself to be kind of annoying. I remembered, I mean, I'm not one to talk. I don't exactly have the greatest, the most pleasing speaking voice either. But at the same time, his was just so, I remember he had such a, it was like, if you could picture my voice, right? But way more forward. What I mean by forward is, what they teach us in, like, in singing, in vocal classes and stuff like that, they teach you about the back of your voice and the front of your voice. Back of your voice being raising the soft palate, making that rounded oh sound, right? Versus that, it was the exact opposite. He had a very forward, nasally tone to him, where he oftentimes spoke like this, like, you know, really, like, it was really abrupt. And I remember that being comforting for me, but, like, I could imagine that being, but, like, I look back at it, and, like, I remembered actually hearing, I can't remember what it was, but I remember hearing his voice as an adult over, like, a video or something. I don't remember what it was, but, like, because you know how it is. I haven't even been in contact with him since I was, like, 8 years old. So, like, he tried contacting me once via Facebook randomly once, but, like, his Facebook kind of creeped me out, and I was like, nah, you know what? I don't need you in my life. But anyway, he had, those are the kind of memories that I really have of him. and also that I did remember, it's funny, I really appreciate, one thing I do appreciate from him is that, and one thing I really appreciate about mom is that the main thing I do remember from him is his love. He did love his children, especially me, because I was his, because I was the one that could actually speak to him. So mm-hmm. Neil was a little too young still to really remember a lot of these things. And he didn't have that much memories of having like any conversations or anything like that with him. Not that I remember any actual conversations, but I do remember that what follows after conversation stuff, the emotions that were behind them. And yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sharing that, Andrew. That's pretty awesome that you have those memories as well. You know, one thing, maybe I want to jump ahead a few years and, well, till now. And I know now you're teaching ukulele at Yale School.
Yeah.
And music at Yale School. And it seems like music is kind of been an important aspect of your life and Neil's life too. Do you remember how that all started, or what brought that about?
You know, for me, I always loved musical things since I was a child. We never really had lessons growing up or anything like that. Like, I remember mom once a while back, like when we were younger, signed us up for like singing lessons and stuff like that, you know. But that was about it. But, like, that was really brief in our younger years. But, like, as soon as I remembered first time I heard my father whistling. A lot of these things go back to him. I remembered that was when I started, like, wanting to whistle. And then I remember watching a lot of these Disney cartoons and stuff like that. And instead of just whistling, these Disney cartoons, they would, like, in key be whistling, you know, like actual tunes, right? And so I remembered that was something for me. I remembered how, like, I remember being in another thing too that really was when we were I remember when we were like, I think it was either kindergarten or first grade. I remember one of my first compliments that I can remember dating back from like another person other than my parents, right? Was Kang Singleton's mom, Auntie Pat, I was like, wow, Andrew, you're like, I remember her like being really impressed because I could whistle like particular tunes by then, including like I remembered and even to this day I'm like, I wonder how accurate it really was, but like the fact that they could recognize what I was whistling. Like for example, if you look at Jiminy Cricket, when you wish upon a star, right, and so on and so forth, that's some pretty large intervals too. Back then I wouldn't have known what that meant, but now it's like I look back and I was like, oh, okay, that's a starting point anyway. But ukulele is really where it all began. Neil started taking ukulele when he was in the fourth grade and I was in the fifth grade. I started ukulele, I remembered, when I was in third or fourth grade, but it didn't stick with me like it stuck with Neil. So, like, at first, I just kind of blew it off a little bit because I didn't have the practice skills back then. And on top of that, too, not just that, but, like, as I mentioned, I'm ADHD, heavily ADHD. So, back then, that was not going to happen back then. There was no way. I didn't really have the right environment for it at the time, but it's amazing how much drive can change when from the concept of, it's funny, I only half jokingly say this, but I took up ukulele after sixth grade because Neil played ukulele already, and we would take him to like all these events. We went to Kanapali, you know what I mean, out in Kanapali. I remember when he and Jesse got invited to fly out to the Roy Sakuma Festival and all that, and I remembered how jealous I got. And so I only half jokingly say this, but I started music partly because I was jealous of the attention Neil was getting, honestly. But like I only, and as I said, it's only half joking. How about like, which but another thing too, though, even before that, though, I do have to say, because I had a starting point. I remember when I started picking up ukulele again, I had a starting point, actually, which was the riff to the Mission Impossible theme song, which you taught to me actually on guitar a long time ago, because I remember you guys, and I was in the fifth grade, you guys gave me my first act electric guitar, and I thought it was the most badass thing. It was really cool. I loved it so much. I still remember today how high that action was, and I remember how much it would cut into my fingers when I didn't know better then, and I would just like be pressing the strings, and I remember the high strings were the ones I could easily press down and make sound, but at the same time they cut into my fingers, and the heavy ones, and so that, but that was like a good transition though, because what I did was I just put that same riff that I learned on there, and I was like, oh yeah, it's just, this sounds, I can play it right over here on the ukulele. And I remembered when I first committed myself to saying, you know what, I'm not going to take band next year, I'm going to take ukulele. And I remembered when I first committed myself to that, and Neil, for the first time, let me play his ukulele. Because Neil was always, well, you know how me and Neil were competitive with everything. So Neil hated sharing with me. He always hated sharing with me. I remembered that. And so when he finally let me play his ukulele, I remembered for like a whole night. And also remember you joking around about, you gotta play till your fingers bleed, making that joke. And I took it literally. And I remembered playing until my fingers were all blistered up, and my third finger I remember actually cutting open my third finger. I was like, I did it. My fingers, and I was all stoked about that. But I literally like spent an entire night just doing the same riff over and over again because ADD brain.
Okay. Great. I remember you were part of the Bodyguards, were you, right?
Oh God, yeah, that's right.
Was that at Neil's in Kanapali, the so, Fest?
Right, when Neil and Jesse, actually the original Bodyguards, right? Jesse Fong.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, Neil and Jesse Fong, they had their little band. And it was, because when they first, what happened was, it started off with as a joke, because what happened was, when they first entered the they had that ukulele festival, right, at, what's it called? Hula Grill, right?
Hula Grill, yeah.
Yeah, the Hula mm-hmm. Grill. And I remember that was Neil, and that was back when Boy Kanaya was still around. I remembered that, when Uncle Boy was still around, and I remembered Neil and Jesse going up on that stage, and Uncle Boy looks to his left, he looks to his right, and there's these two tiny little Asian kids, like small, they're already like the smallest in their, not only are they like little kids, but they're like the smallest in their class too, right, on top of that, so like they were extra tiny kids. And he's like, oh, and I remember him saying, oh, these are my bodyguards. And then he started mentioning, oh, everyone, welcome the bodyguards and stuff like that. And that's kind of where it started there. And they kept jamming for a while. Jesse kind of like phased out of playing ukulele, I remembered. And it was around the same time that when I was getting into it, actually. And so me and Neil started playing. I remembered, before me and Neil even started playing together and doing gigs, I remembered before that even, because like we both started taking from the same private tutor, Mr. Ryan Tanaka, actually, and who taught us a lot of good stuff. It was amazing that he was able to put up with me, again, just because of how crazy of a kid I was. I really give him props to that. he actually taught us so much, and he taught us so much. I still like some of the stuff that I teach that I teach now today to either private students or even like some of my students that are just curious about coming into my classroom. You know, if they're wanting to learn extra stuff, a lot of the stuff that I choose to teach, I learned from him actually. We started playing. So anyway, me and Neil were already kind of like practicing together and stuff like that, but in Polynesian music class in Kalama Intermediate School, Mr. Rama Camarillo actually used to teach there before he went to teach at Kamehameha schools, and that was like one of the big things, like a lot of kids were stoked about going to Kalama school, was that if you join Poly, you get to like do all these concerts and stuff like that. He really did an excellent job getting gigs for the kids and teaching us to play a variety of songs. But we met Lance Rabago, right? Mm-hmm. And because he was in my class, and me and Lance would like, I remembered Lance noticed that I was playing stuff that was a little more advanced than just strumming the ukulele, right? Than just, or the stuff that we were learning in class at the moment, because everyone's learning Pearly Shells. And then there's me, I'm all stoked. I just learned how to play Drop Baby Drop. And I remembered Lance was excited about that. And he actually approached me and said, hey, let's jam together. And then we started like kind of playing songs together. And he was really, and that's kind of where that began. And so that's where I feel like that's where Bodyguards became at first, I remembered being a little hesitant about using that name, because it's like, oh, why write off of that, right? Because technically I'm not one of those kids, but it just kind of happened that way. Mom got excited, she made us t-shirts and all that. It was a lot of fun. It really was a lot of fun. I remember we were like, we need a bass player, and so oh, David Puleku, yeah he plays bass, oh yeah. And then we kind of, that happened. We did a few gigs here and there throughout for like the span of like a year or two, actually. It was really fun. It was really a gateway for really not just wanting to be a musician, but being proud to be a musician, you know, and really understanding what that pride meant, and understanding and really gave a drive to want to get better and better, you know. Mm-hmm. So much has happened throughout those years, but I don't want to dive too long into that topic. I could probably vlog about that for like hours, right? Where was I getting to? Oh yeah, so switching back, going Speaking of which, so did you play music when you were in like high school and stuff like that, or like anything like that, or did that start afterwards in like adulthood?
Well, kind of, you know, I was always interested in music, but never really quite proficient with it. But when I was young, I had a group of friends, and we were called the Unknown Gas.
The Unknown Gas. I love it.
We were pretty bad. Actually, I still know the guys. Still contact them, we had like one of those reel-to-reel tape recorders. So we actually made a track or two, which I don't know where they are now, but...
That's great. Yeah. I've never heard that one. Okay. That's awesome. Because like I remember you were into wrestling. I remembered you were in wrestling. I remembered you were honestly, there's only small tidbits here and there that me and Neil learned about your life as a high, okay. Life growing up. I think a big part of that is just that we never asked, right? So like, I think that's one of the things, because you're always really open with us. So, speaking of which, you're going to high school at the time, right? Did you have any jobs? Starting in high school, like.
Sure. So when I was actually, I think this kind of maybe relates to the story that I want to tell about this is since we're close to Halloween, something with kind of not supernatural, but some kind of unusual theme. But when I was in 1974, I just finished my junior year at Baldwin High School. In those days, we were pretty much asked or required to get a summer job. And among the employees here in Central Maui, we're living in
demanded of to get a summer job by the school?
No, by your parent, my parents.
Oh, okay. You know. Okay, I was just wondering, because like, that was like, oh, that's so weird, because like I remember like in Japan, like some schools, like they'll get upset if their students are taking on work and stuff like that.
Yeah, so this is summer, right? They don't want you lounging around at home watching TV, so.
Right.
So I got a summer job with Maui Pine, or Maui Land and Pine.
So that was your first job then?
On Maui.
On Maui?
Yeah.
Oh.
Junior year in high school.
And before you did, I remember you telling me this before, actually. You did a container job before that, right?
I was loading containers, shipping containers, and this was in Japan at Shinko Warehouse.
Dang.
And this was part of the Navy Exchange.
And did you pick your work? Or because like those sound like some pretty... like.
I think my friend's dad had...
Hard-ass work. Yeah. That's some hard-ass work.
It was pretty hard work.
For a high school, yeah, exactly. For a teenager, that's some hard work. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I'm sorry. Continue so your friend's dad had some connections, and you jumped on it because you know, let's make some money. Let's right.
Well, for the warehouse job, that was $1 an hour.
Oh, ouch!
Yeah.
Even. Wow. That's gotta have gone against U.S. labor laws back then, but you weren't in the U.S., so... But no, you were in U.S. territory, though, right?
Well, on a military base.
Yeah.
But I don't think that really mattered.
Was that legal?
The point's kind of mute right now.
Oh, okay, but, sorry. Okay.
So anyways, where was I going? Oh, yeah, back to when I was working, the Halloween kind of theme, when I was, we were working in the pineapple fields.
Yeah.
And so this is an industry that's not here anymore. But when you worked in the pineapple fields, you had to wear all kinds of gear and clothing because the pineapple things are really sharp and everything. But I decided to work night shift because it's much cooler in the daytime.
Yeah.
And... my friend and I would drive up to Haili Mili from Central Maui, where the main place was, and we'd get into these covered trucks, kind of like troop carrier trucks, and they'd drive us out to the pineapple fields where we'd start picking pineapples. We're walking behind a boom that's going across the road of the pineapples, and there's these bright lights shining down on you as you're picking. And I think we were making maybe $2.50 an hour at that point, or something pretty minimal as well. But this one event that I really recall is we're in the field somewhere. I didn't know exactly where we were because we're in these covered trucks going up there, picking pineapple, following the boom. And I guess there's maybe like 10 or 12 of us in the gang. And the kid next to me, or beyond him, suddenly had turned around and pointed up to the sky, in the night sky. And actually, four or five of us turned around at the same time. And there above us was this glittering, glowing object in the sky, kind of flashing lights.
A very glowing object.
And if I recall, I could see like humanoid type figures kind of silhouetted by those lights. Of course, we couldn't hear anything either because, you know, the boom and the truck gets going, so we couldn't hear any sounds, but we could see that.
How big were these lights? Like,
it's hard to tell. I mean, up in the sky, they looked
like from where big. You were looking. I'm saying, like, what?
It seemed pretty close. Like I said, seeing the silhouetted figures.
Wow! Yeah, a silhouetted. Like a tondo size kind of thing, or like a
maybe as if it was a car in the sky or something.
Oh wow! Okay.
That size. I mean, but from our point of view.
Right.
But I mean, maybe that lasted a second or three, and then it disappeared. It literally, literally flew off into space and disappeared before our eyes. And we were kind of standing there dumbstruck. The boom kept moving on.
And it was like, it's not just you, right? There was like three or four other people, right?
Yeah, of us that were witnessing this. Our Luna noticed that we were behind our boss, so he told the truck driver to stop so we could catch up with the boom, and none of us were, you know, said, did you see that, what was that? And so to this day, I mean, that's like my spooky story memory. I'm not sure what it was, and this was back in the 1970s, and especially on Maui then there were a lot of different sightings. So who knows, was it something extraterrestrial, or was it some government drone or something? I don't know, but it definitely has had influence in my art, as I've been always fascinated with that since.
Yeah.
Anyways, but I think while we're in that theme,
that's really interesting too, like, because it really did play a role in how should I put it, for me and Neil too. Like, it really played a role for like how your artwork, as well as like a bunch of like a lot of the stuff you used to collect and stuff back then. You had a lot of alien stuff. I remember that. You had posters. I remember when me and Neil first met, like when we first met you, the very first day we came in the studio, I remembered that. Or at least that's the first time I remember meeting you anyway, right? And I remember coming to your studio for the first time and seeing that UFO right over, actually, while we're in here, yeah, that UFO, and there was you had a poster with, like, categories of them, and all I could think was, wow, these look like because these are, like, some of these are cinema UFOs, you know, they're old-school cinema UFOs, and back then, me and Neil were really into Godzilla movies, and the number, and, like, I was like, wow, that looks exactly like, really tripping out at that. And so, like, me and Neil were like, all right, this ought to be fun already, immediately. That was, like, one of the big things that kind of, like, made it easier for me and Neil to actually get used to you, was that you're into a lot of really sci-fi nerdy stuff.
Okay. Maybe do you have something along that lines you might want to share?
I mean, I have a variety that I could. Just growing up here, but I think the main thing that I want to If I were to share one, my main horror story that I remember, because there's all the Lanai horror stories when we'd go camping with family over there. There's all the horror stories that we'd hear about through, like, you know, local lore on Maui. But I remember one time very vividly where we went camping with mom and the bio dad, you know, and I remember we're set up. I don't exactly remember where we were, but I do remember being in our after it was one of his fishing spots. We're out near the road, and I remember we're all in the tent already, getting ready to go to bed, you know, doing shadow puppets, having some hot cocoa and stuff like that. At least I remember being inside. Maybe we were shoveled inside after, but either my dad or my mom, you know, they started hearing like drums go off, and you know, like, oh, everyone already knows where this is going, right? The Night March story, right? And so we were inside the tent, I remembered though, and I just remembered, like, I remembered me and Neil were crying. Mom's trying to hush us up. She's trying to keep us occupied. We're not crying, but like I remember being ready to cry. I remember the emotions. It was extreme fear. I remember the tent shaking. I remember lights. I remember seeing lights from some kind of like light source. It looked like it was probably a lamps. And I remember just the whole tent shaking, the noise getting louder and louder and louder. And then I also remembered mom did what she had, a flashlight, and she was making shadow puppets and trying to keep me and Neil occupied doing that. Honestly, other than that, all I remember are feelings. It was definitely one of the most fear moments I've ever had experiencing. We ended up, I'm not sure if it was necessarily that fear, because me and Neil picked it up from our parents, or like, you know, cause I don't, like, so much of this could be psychosomatic, right? Like, so much of this could have been us hearing things, but till this day, for me, that's as real as it gets. And this is coming from somebody who is like practically an atheist at this point in his life, you know. I don't really have a whole lot of. I question everything that I thought might have been a spiritual encounter for me. I question it, even including that one. But that's one of the ones where even till today, no matter how much I question it, it always feels real till today.
Wow, that sounds pretty scary.
Okay. All right.
Well, I want to thank you, Andrew, for talking story with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's been real. I think we found a lot about each other that we didn't know. So it's really good, great experience.
Yeah. Thank you. I was really stoked to do this. When I heard that, oh, we get to like ask each other questions and stuff like that. It just feels like it was a good reason for me to kind of probe you a little bit.
Okay, well, more is yet to come. All right, on. Thank you.
Thank you.